word. Life designed on their own terms. Your turn. Reflect, discuss, journal. Considering minimalism and accumulation, their perks and adjustments, which direction would you like to pursue? What would be the ideal size of your business? What do you find the most challenging in implementing a successful growth strategy? Creative career insight. If there's no system to handle growth efficiently, you may end up with more work and less profit. 9. The comfort of change. Do anything, but let it produce joy. Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass. You've been feeling the need to change for a while now. You know there are options, but you don't dare to explore them. Working days pass, filled to the brim with tasks. You hardly have the time to catch a breath. You feel the urge of checking things off the list. You focus on the tasks that have immediate or past due deadlines, which will provide instant gratification. At nights, you try to socialize, meet your friends, date. When the weekend comes, you need to rejuvenate. You're so tired that you need at least half a day to do absolutely nothing. Then run errands, do some more socializing, maybe, or working out, having neglected it during the week. And, once again, you're not excited to start another week. On Sunday night, your stomach hurts, but you accept it because you know a lot of people experience it. Then the next day, there's the I hate Mondays feeling. Again, you know that most people you know feel the same week after week. We're caught in the daily minutiae and our long-term plans suffer. Our big plans have no deadline, so we don't feel the pressure forcing us to accomplish them. Our dreams suffer. There's never enough time to devote to them as we're playing a constant catch-up with our daily, more immediate things. You may only see the devoted and depressed people with day jobs in your circles. You may feel that you have to continue the rat race like everyone else you see. You move like a bee from morning to evening, accomplishing one project after the next, being pushed by the deadlines which are always too close or past due. Then your 1.5 free hours after work are spent on squeezing in some social time, a meal, or resting with brainless TV because you're absolutely exhausted. You're too tired to think about making changes and feel demotivated by your colleagues who play the work game daily. Starting a business would make you feel like a person ready to start a revolution, a nonconformist. But there are 500,000 people in the United States alone that you don't notice who decided to start their private revolution, start a business. Over 550,000 new businesses are started every month in the United States alone. There's no sitting on the bench just thinking about what you are going to do. There is only getting in the game. Designers try things. They test things out. They create prototype after prototype, failing often until they find what works and what solves the problem. Bill Burnett and Dave Evans, Designing Your Life. Dreaming versus living your dream. We keep dreaming about our dreams, planning, speculating, deep in our thoughts of what if. It feels so comforting to think that one day our dreams will not be dreams. We dream our dreams, thinking that their execution should take time. We think we need to be ready for it. Dreams usually mean changes, and because changes are tough, we need to prepare for them. We need more time, more experience, and more money. We analyze those who are already living our dream, and this only reassures us that we need to wait. We don't have the experience, connection, and money they do. Knowing that changes are uncomfortable and risky makes us continue what we're doing and staying dissatisfied with our predictable status quo. Where we are is comfortable and safe, so we choose not to choose and keep dreaming. We may get pushed by the discomfort to take the necessary steps to stop dreaming and start living our dream. We decide to take a leap, quit, embark on a new journey. We say we're jumping in feet first, and our friends ask us if we're sure that we should make such a rushed decision. In reality, this decision is not rushed. We have been dreaming this dream for years, and because we were pushed beyond our limits, we decided to go for it. This path may be a great solution, but it's not a safe one. Whenever you hear that entrepreneurs are risk-takers, it does hold true, but their risks are very calculated, minimizing the loss. It's not a good idea to wait until we're pushed over our limits to decide to make a change. Such decisions should be taken and executed methodically. It's important to take the first step toward your dream as soon as the transition idea comes to your mind. In doing so, you will have plenty of time to try things out, experiment, and make changes. We may realize that dreaming our dream is great, but living it is letting us down. All these realizations are important steps toward creating the life we want. Don't think that having spent time on developing what we thought was a dream career is wasteful. Sometimes discovering what we don't want to do is a necessary step in designing the life we want. Taking baby steps versus a big leap in business. I sometimes wonder why there's such a draw to make changes in business radically. CEOs often decide to restructure and reinvent something that needs only minor alterations. The draw of starting with a clean slate or making a big leap in business is caused by our ego and strong desire to make a significant impact and get noticed. We are more likely to be seen and recognized if we innovate than if we make tiny alterations. There are award ceremonies for inventions, and promotions are given for restructuring efforts, but no one gives prizes for making small alterations. Every next level of your life will demand a different you. Leonardo DiCaprio. When we set our minds on taking a big leap in our business, we may need to take the time and courage to do it. Radical changes are risky and scary. We postpone making them, sometimes indefinitely. We prefer living the way we always have been. Those opting for making baby steps will get a quick start on the process and will keep making alterations according to customers' feedback. Being agile nowadays is key to coming up with winning products that people are willing to pay for. Thanks to making small steps toward changes in our careers and businesses, we minimize the risk of spending time and energy following the path that doesn't serve us. It's easier to keep adjusting and making small steps in different directions than to keep pivoting. Those thinking that adjustments will not be necessary are in store for a surprise. We won't be deciding about the shifts. It's our customers who will show us that change is needed by not buying what we're selling them. Those business owners who had taken a big leap may be tempted to keep trying to convince their clients that what they sell has value. They may not be willing to pivot because of the investment they had already made, and simply because they want to be right. They will lose this game to the more agile businesses that are more responsive to changes and provide what customers want. Changing Kaizen style versus innovating. Many people think that change is not comfortable. They dread it, postpone it. When they say they're excited about the change, it's not the same excitement as the joy before going on vacation. It's excitement mixed in with worries and some anticipation. Most people dread making changes because they associate it with losing control and not being able to predict the results. There's no secure plan that our transformation path will follow. Instead of exciting, this novel transformation idea can be crippling. Often we're not happy with the status quo, but our current situation seems more secure and doesn't require new energy to maintain it. Change takes effort and time, which we seem not to have enough of. We are worried that making changes may cause us discomfort and will not provide immediate benefits. Its payoff may be so far into the future that it may not be motivating. Discouraged, we decide to stay and survive in the status quo, taking on the accepting attitude and convincing ourselves that our life is not that bad. A lot of people are aware that change needs to happen, but only talk about it, postponing it until some vague deadline. Then time passes, and one day when the current situation gets simply too unbearable, we're forced to change, and we do it in the harshest possible way, cold turkey, jumping in feet first. Making a change can be compared with changing lanes while driving a car. Changing lanes needs to happen or we risk missing our exit, driving past our planned destination. If we decide to change lanes, we need to prepare ourselves by checking the mirrors and blind spots. We need to anticipate and choose the right time easing into the lane. The risk of not preparing for changing lanes is huge. We may get lucky and change it with no problems if there are no cars coming, but there's also a possibility of a darker scenario. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Tao Te Ching. Often we postpone the change for so long that when we're pressed to make it, we have no other choice left but to make it in a sudden, drastic way. This leaves a bad aftertaste and makes us dread changes. However, there's also a more organic way of making changes. Enter the Kaizen way. Kaizen is a practice of continuous improvement. One of the pioneers of Kaizen in the West was Masaki Imai, who wrote the book Kaizen, The Key to Japan's Competitive Success, in 1986. Kai in Japanese means change, and Zen means good. Making changes the Kaizen way is associated with continuous improvement and taking small, comfortable steps toward change. Robert Maurer in One Small Step Can Change Your Life advises adapting the Kaizen strategy to make changes, especially changes that are challenging. For example, end-of-year goals have a better chance of being accomplished if we gradually ease into them. In the example of a woman who puts 4 spoons of sugar in her tea but wants to drink it with no sugar, she takes a spoonful less each day. Then, when she is down to only 1 spoonful of sugar, removing it completely feels too drastic, so she removes a grain of sugar a day from that last spoon. It takes her a year to drink her tea with no sugar, but this new habit is more permanent. You may now say that you don't have Japanese patience and precision to deal with change grain by grain, but this example is a great illustration of taking very small steps toward change. The process is less painful and the results are more lasting. Kaizen gets rid of the habit. I invite you to divide your path leading to your dream lifestyle into as many small steps as you'd like. Get comfortable with the process. It's not important how long the process will take if the result is sustainable. It's crucial to come up with a strategy and make that first small step. Creating your pivot plan. Even though you may feel you've been pushed beyond your limits and you need to take immediate steps to make a change because you can't take your current situation anymore, it's worth approaching making a change in a mindful way. Here are 7 steps that will prepare you to pivot. 1. Name the limiting beliefs that have been stopping you from living the life you deserve. These are the feelings that have been blocking you all these years and are making you overstay in the situation you were supposed to quit a long time ago. Is it low self-esteem? People in your life who don't believe in you? Excuses? Imaginary lack of resources? Become aware of what has been stopping you. 2. Realize why you want to change and stop living life by default. Being clear about what has been making us lead an uncomfortable life and why we want to make a switch will help us make our change sustainable. Describe the daily pain you feel, the restless Sunday nights because you dread going to work on Monday. Know what you can't stand in the current situation. Be motivated by the discomfort you have been accepting for too long. Have you been feeling that you're surviving instead of living? Is your lunch break something you wait for every day? You know that this is not the life you want to live, but if you don't write all these reasons that make your life merely survival, with time, they'll seem smaller and not worth the struggle. 3. Stop comparing yourself to those who are in a worse position. You know your value and what you deserve. Don't listen to those who let you know that you should be grateful for what you have, reminding you that there are many people who have it worse. There are always going to be those who have it worse, as well as those who have it better. It's for you to develop immunity to comparisons, which may be roadblocks in following the path to your dream career and lifestyle. 4. List all the small steps you need to take to get ready to make the change. Creating a plan of action will set us up for a successful execution of our planned pivot. Strategize your plan to pivot by writing down all the tiny steps you need to take to make it more organic. 5. Replace feelings of regrets of why you didn't change sooner with dreams about what's possible. You may be tempted to victimize yourself and dwell upon how long you've been surviving instead of living. Resist this temptation and redirect your thoughts to what's opening up for you in the future. Also, you may be tempted to take your thoughts for a spin and dwell upon how late it is for you to make a change. Change your thoughts about the past into thoughts about the exciting future ahead of you. 6. Stop waiting for encouragement because you may not get any. It's rare to receive support while you are going through the process of change. You'll probably experience a lot of discouragement from loved ones and those who are envious of you taking a leap. They want you to stay where you are and share their misery. They'll have arguments trying to scare you and discourage you from making the change. 7. Visualize your life after the change. Your life will be different after you make the change. You'll start living your dream. Your mood will change and your energy level will go up. Think of all these positive lifestyle changes that will happen to you and realize that you shouldn't wait any longer to take that first step. This visualization could transform your fear to pivot into excitement. From side hustle to your creative career. Anyone who says that entrepreneurs are risk takers is partially wrong. Successful business owners test their products for months before the launch to minimize their risk of failure. They test, iterate, and repeat until they get the approval not from their family and friends, but from their customers who are willing to buy what they sell. We can compare a product launch process to our career change. I'm a proponent of starting your creative career as a side hustle. Starting a new business while being employed puts us in a comfortable setting of following our passion at our own pace. Employment gives us confidence, which is crucial when starting and running a business. It's already overwhelming enough to launch something new. There's a lot of learning and experimenting, so the financial support that income gives us will make the transition easier. We don't feel desperate and forced to make it, which can be crippling. Basing our business prospects on pity will seldom work. Our potential clients may already be involved in supporting organizations and charities, and they may not want to support you because they feel forced to help. They would rather support you because you provide what they need. I was on Wall Street when I started my jewelry business and kept my day job until Lucid New York started providing me with enough profit to be able to support myself in New York City. It was extremely tough to have two full-time careers, and I did it for close to a year, but the comfort of transition it gave me was irreplaceable. My position on Wall Street as a project manager taught me structure and made me realize why I wanted to become an entrepreneur. More than anything, I wanted to be in charge of my time. Even when I realized that for a long time I would be putting in more hours, I knew I was doing it for a reason, to start living life by design. Some may find quitting their jobs a freeing and motivating way to start a creative career. Substantial savings earned over the years of settling for living the life by default can provide a cushion needed to take chances, experiment with ideas, and launch a successful business. There is not a single formula to start your dream career. So if a drastic change is something you need to get pushed and start living your dream, create a plan around it and do it. Transitioning versus enriching your life. Transition, 2 to 3. Enriched life, 2 + A + B + C. When we decide to make a change, it's often because we are pushed beyond the acceptable limits of what we can deal with. We feel desperate and want to make a quick and full exit. Our tolerance level has reached its limits. We want to pivot, do a 180, leave the old behind and start anew. If we started preparing ourselves for a change before we reached this unacceptable place, we would be able to make decisions in a more rational way. We may look deep into our current situation and consider shifting or expanding sideways instead of fully transitioning out. Taking a fresh look at what we have already achieved and where we currently are may open our minds to new opportunities, which can be achieved by making tiny shifts instead of a drastic change. Such small changes may already re-energize us, and we may fall in love with what we do. We will be experiencing the comfort of the familiar with the excitement for the new. This enriched life may be more fulfilling for us than embarking on something completely new. Making a change doesn't always have to translate itself into making a transition. We may realize that adding what we love to what we already have, or tweaking a strategy, may be enough to get us on the path to fulfillment. I used to travel to many wholesale shows with Lucid New York. My focus was on selling my designs to boutiques and department stores. After 5 years, I was overwhelmed with the quantity of orders and the necessity of working nonstop. I did not want to expand. I wanted to run a sustainable business that would allow me to grow my other passions. Instead of transitioning and starting something unrelated, I decided to refocus and devote my energy to retail sales. I found retail invigorating and the face-to-face relationships with clients more motivating. I would get immediate feedback, and my customers started paying attention to my brand and asking for new designs. Selling wholesale, my focus was on supplying pieces produced overseas. When I started focusing on retail, my handmade collection got more attention. I really enjoyed expressing myself creatively by coming up with new designs. My clients' direct feedback has been my inspiration for the direction I take my designs. We may also realize that there is nothing to be saved from our current life, nothing that we want to hold on to. If you can clearly see that your current life needs a drastic transformation, there's no point in enriching something that has no strong base. You need to start building a new platform and get on the path of enriching it. Create a transition process that you can accept with comfort. Enjoy the path and try not to obsess over the end goal. The journey may make you discover what you hadn't known before. Follow your transition course, but be agile and open to veering off if you discover a more exciting direction. Finding comfort in soy chai latte. You're not a morning person, but you've been waking up with an alarm clock for years. This is what needs to be done. You do that to rush to the job you absolutely hate. Your days are monotonous, and you haven't felt challenged in a long time. You have a job that pays the bills, assuming that this is what should be done. You don't know too many people who love their jobs. A job is a job. Through the years, you've found ways to make yourself feel better. You start with a comforting morning routine by going to your favorite coffee shop and ordering the same large soy chai latte. You love how it consoles you. You then go to the gym to spend some time alone, being in the moment. Your workout is so tough that there is no way your thoughts will wander anywhere. You're aware and fully focused on what you're doing. You count the push-ups, trying to beat your personal record and forgetting about reality. You love your mornings. They let you forget about what's next. You arrive at work in a great mood, but you suspect that your attitude will change into something between boredom and dissatisfaction with a touch of depression. At 2 p.m., you may sneak out to get another soy chai latte. This beverage is so comforting. It's as if you were getting a chai hug, reassuring that everything will be okay. Days pass and you keep coasting, surviving thanks to chai lattes, the gym, and happy hour drinking and socializing. You know that you can't do this forever, but you don't make any firm plans to make any changes. You choose to move sideways instead of forward, not feeling ready and enjoying the non-committal nature of now. By coasting, you avoid the temporary discomfort of making changes. At least you know what to expect every day. There's no risk. You follow your daily routine, drink your soy chai latte for comfort, go to the gym to forget, and keep dreaming your dream. It's challenging to break from this dissatisfying routine because it's comfortable in its unchanging way. You see others being in the zone, coasting through life demotivated. Only those with intrinsic motivation and a strong reason behind pursuing their own unconventional path will end up designing their dream life. They won't need comforting themselves with daily soy lattes. Their excitement about what's about to come will give them fuel to continue. Your turn. Reflect, discuss, journal. How can Kaizen Way make your change process more comfortable? Which one of the 7 steps to pivot plan do you find most challenging? What's the smallest step you could take to start creating your dream lifestyle? Creative career insight. Get comfortable with the process. It's not important how long the process will take if the result is sustainable. 10. Creatives and money, profit and pricing. Most of the time, customers don't know what they want in advance. Eric Ries, The Lean Startup. Many business owners have a pricing formula they follow to make sure their business is cash flow positive. Some multiply their cost by 2.5 to come up with a price. This formula doesn't work well if you're a creative entrepreneur who should be taking into consideration more variables than just cost. Besides product cost, do consider perceived value, brand, circumstances, originality, scarcity, and other factors which you often can't put a price on. As a creative, you often should ask yourself how much the client is willing to pay for your work. Taking a painter as an example, it's not the cost of paints, brushes, and canvas that should determine the price. It's the perceived value, which is influenced by his brand, originality, perceived quality, and beauty. There's a famous story in The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, where he talks about a turquoise jewelry collection displayed in the window. The pieces were not selling until a new sales assistant raised their prices by mistake. Customers started buying the pieces because they trusted the high-priced jewelry was of superior quality. When pieces were priced low, they wondered if the jewelry had real stones in it. Few would opt in for a doctor offering low-priced services. We associate high-priced shoes with comfort and style. We are willing to pay premium for quality products that promise to solve our problems. Profit versus pricing versus positioning. It's important to know where your products belong. Being able to identify the price of other competing products, as well as your competitive advantage, is key to choosing the correct price and calculating profit. Your products won't exist in isolation, and the more you're informed about their entourage, the better. Entrepreneurs should not get discouraged by the multitude of products in their category, and customers' comparison shopping. They should treat it as a sign that there's a demand and should focus on developing their unique value proposition, areas where their products are better than others in the market. If you notice a void in the marketplace, it may be an opportunity, but more often it's because there's no demand for it. Products that can provide more value are now expected. Customers are no longer searching only for convenience or competitive pricing. They now want products or services that can expand them, stretch their potential, and bring true joy. They are now expecting add-ons, sometimes intangible ones. They want to be surprised and taken care of. Upselling and offering a full solution has never been easier. They want quality and are willing to pay for it. Often, creatives have a hard time putting a price tag on what they make. To make it easier, here is what you should take into consideration. Years spent learning the craft, your time spent making the pieces, even though often it doesn't feel like work, you should be compensated for the time spent making the pieces. Positioning of your products and competitors' prices, scarcity of your products, seasonality. Consider if your products are seasonal and there's a limited quantity that you can supply. Your product cost. Do notice that even though it's important to keep the cost in check, the product cost is only one of the parameters influencing the price. What people are willing to pay for it. The easiest way to control the high demand for your products is to increase your prices. Not everyone wants to implement a new strategy to manage growth successfully. Asking for money. My first website was made by a couple of creatives who did a beautiful job designing. But this is not what has inspired me to mention them in this book. They had a problem which I noticed a lot of creatives deal with. They had a hard time asking to be compensated for their work. I remember they split my payments into a few installments, and they wouldn't remind me to make a payment when I was late. One day I did get a reminder email from a different email address. I found out that they had created an alter ego so that they didn't feel awkward asking for what they are owed. Since then, I have encountered other creatives who have had a hard time discussing pricing. When asked, they would apologetically quote a price and add right away, without being asked, that they were open to negotiating. They lacked confidence in their products, themselves, and their business. I once knew a creative who was so petrified letting his client know how much his services were that he postponed this conversation until the very end and created an uncomfortable situation. The client was caught by surprise by the price, not only because he was not prepared for it, but also because he didn't know until the very end how much he owed. Being open about pricing and sharing it with confidence will put both parties at ease and make the transaction seamless. I've seen creatives offering discounts without being asked. Grant Cardone in Sell or Be Sold says that usually the seller is the most concerned about the discount. In most cases, a customer is ready to pay a fair price for the services he gets. A few years ago, I worked with a design team, and after having completed a few extensive projects, they said they could offer me a $500 discount. The first reaction that came to my mind was, why? I was happy with the result and was ready to pay for the projects. I gladly accepted the discount, of course, but they could have charged me the previously agreed-upon price. The fact that creatives offer discounts without being asked for them still surprises me. We'll explore low-value work and discounts later in this chapter. Solving the problem of unsteady income. When I speak to fellow creatives, they often bring up the common issue of unsteady income. Some say that they get a large payment and it makes them feel reassured about their craft, but the problem is that they don't know when the next large payment is coming. As a creative, you have to decide if you want to be employed and keep getting assigned projects, or if you want to be a creative entrepreneur. There's a big difference, because if you're employed, you receive a salary and do the work for others. If you are a business owner, your revenue strictly depends on you and your work. Assuming you chose the latter, you need to be constantly on the lookout for what's next. There are going to be times when you won't be starting a new project right after you finish the previous one. You'll have to be agile and take the work when it comes. You may have to work on a few projects at the same time and then have a week off. You won't be able to choose which week until you get really established in the business. For more than a decade, I have been very busy toward the end of the year. From store owners to last-minute gift buyers, most of my customers want their orders fast and in December. I can't tell them to wait until January. I need to take advantage and adjust to the nature of the business I had started. I'm still busy on December 24th. As overwhelmed as I am in December, I still reach out for more business opportunities, knowing that this is the prime time for my business. Would I like my busiest month to be January instead of December? Absolutely. Every year I miss most of the holiday parties and get-togethers, but I know that this is the price I have to pay to live the designed life I created. Here are things to do to avoid unsteady income problems. If your business has a season when it thrives, do capitalize on it. Don't try to make your business regular. Nothing in entrepreneurship is regular. Keep sending ships daily. I'll talk more about sending ships in Chapter 11, but it's important for a creative to keep reaching out via different channels to people from different social circles without expecting anything in return. Continue building a community. Be specific when you ask for referrals. Connect efficiently. Continue hustling, even when a large check comes in. Keep creating income streams. Identify low-value work and think of the ways to replace it with more lucrative projects. Don't offer discounts if you don't have to. Don't work for free, even if it doesn't seem like work. Successful business owners are constantly thinking about creative methods to make money. They don't rest on their laurels. They know not to take their careers for granted. They read, take courses, and get inspired to create another system or income-producing opportunity for their business. They reach out and stay connected. They have a plan that keeps changing depending on circumstances. Paying yourself. If your creative business emerges from a hobby, it's easy to lose yourself in your passion and forget to charge for your hours worked. Even if you love what you do and your work doesn't seem like work, you still have to get paid in order for your business to be sustainable. If you transition from a hobby to a business, you have to change your habits, systems, and expectations. There's not a better feeling in the world than profiting from your passions, but only if you are smart about it. You are not a hobbyist anymore. Your business went beyond making products for family and friends. You now own a business, and you need to be compensated for your work. As a hobbyist, you used to decide what pieces to make, but as a business owner, you'll be responding to customers' demand. You may end up making 50 pieces of the same design and dealing with fulfillment deadlines and payment terms. Do your due diligence. Your research should show you how you should position your products and how to price them. Being tempted to undercut the market prices by not paying yourself is not a sustainable strategy, and your low prices may not be seen as a competitive advantage. Customers seeing your low prices may assume you're providing poor quality products, unless you have a good reason for your low prices. If you are involved in the production of products, you should be compensated for the hours spent making things. Having a thin profit margin and not paying yourself is a recipe for a business failure. The prices you charge for your labor should depend on the end result, your products, and how much your customers are willing to pay for them. They will be the judge of your talent and expertise. Someone with no formal apprenticeship or education may offer pieces that are seen as more commercially valuable than work made by an artist with a formal education. Readers don't check if an author has an MFA. Art connoisseurs won't buy a painting because the creative got a formal degree. It's all about the final products and how valuable they seem to the potential clients. The value behind the product is based on how fitting the pieces are in the customer's lives. However, there are creatives who set their prices based on the degree or years of experience. In some fields, it's easier to use this measure because it offers clear benchmarks. At hair salons, professionals often get compensated based on their experience. A haircut with a senior stylist is priced higher than a service with an apprentice. If you are unsure how to price your labor, start by increasing your hourly pricing according to your years of experience. Your customers will guide your pricing. If your compensation as a creative is not what satisfies you, you can always refine your business model and change it into a more fitting strategy. Your business is like an ever-morphing creature, and you are its master. Thriving online, making money while you sleep. Graphic designer Nikki Lotz, who became known for her best-selling fonts, reached an important milestone selling on Creative Market, a community where photographers, graphic designers, and other creatives post their work for sale. Nikki has sold $1 million worth of fonts. Nikki transitioned from contract work and started prioritizing online sales after realizing it was a better fit for her lifestyle. Rounds of iterations and pressure of deadlines were stressful and joy-depleting. In the Creative Market video, where fellow creatives congratulate her on having reached a $1 million mark, Nikki is glowing. She gets emotional. She found the space to thrive in on her own terms, being surrounded by a supportive community. Selling online is one of the most desired business strategies among business owners. It amplifies the feeling of entrepreneurial freedom and working on your own terms. We have to respect the rules we created, such as prompt shipping and answering customers' questions, but many online business decisions are up to us. We decide what we want to put up for sale and in what quantity. Online business can give us tremendous satisfaction. Isn't checking your email in the morning and seeing orders placed when you were sleeping like winning a small daily lottery? Getting paid when you sleep is a dream of many. Taking these online orders out of context and disregarding idea generation, site building, product promotion, we can actually make money while we sleep. Keeping a website or a software program afloat is like keeping a yacht afloat. It is a black hole for attention. Kevin Kelly, The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. In 2013, Corey O'Loughlin and Nina Vitolino launched their online store, Prep Obsessed. Against the common advice not to run a business on a domain that you don't own, the duo decided to focus their efforts on growing their Facebook business page and driving their sales mainly via Facebook. They did it very successfully by investing $40 a day on Facebook ads targeting women aged 20 to 50 who are interested in fashion, home, and garden, who are fans of Tory Burch and Lily Pulitzer. Within 4 years, Corey and Nina grew their Facebook fan base to 300,000. Because they targeted the right niche instead of the number of likes, Prep Obsessed amassed a large group of fans who are very engaged. Even though Facebook changed the rules of content visibility on business pages, and it's now more difficult to get noticed, Prep Obsessed figured out a way to thrive by providing relevant content. Sharing multiple daily posts, the site uses Soldsy to make the posts easy to shop from. Viewers see suggested items that are styled and displayed with prices. One click will take us to the checkout page without leaving Facebook. These shoppable posts, offering well-curated items at reasonable prices, win us over and entice our urge to impulse shop. Prep-obsessed Facebook fans are also encouraged to vote on what type of items they'd like to see more of by reacting with an appropriate emoji. Fans' choices of whether they'd like to see more little black dress styles, comfy casual, or casual daytime will be visible and accounted for when the team of Prep-obsessed places the orders at their suppliers at trade shows. Including customers in the decision-making process, as well as making their shopping experience easy, is the key to creating a powerful brand backed by an army of devoted and supportive fans who spread the word. Multiple streams of income. As a creative, you should always be thinking of adding another stream of income and refining the ones you already have. Even if your business is thriving now, do think of another stream of income as a security net. You can be inspired by reading success stories of entrepreneurs who do something that you are drawn to. Suggest meetings, get a mentor, and think what you can offer to generate an additional stream of income. Consider starting a venture on the side. Creating another stream of income is not only financially beneficial, but this slight diversion from what we do may be growth conducive. If your current business reached a comfortable level, you can treat creating another stream of income as your sandbox. You can keep experimenting and discovering what you love doing without the pressure of having to succeed. You can start a hobby and transform it into a side hustle, which may stay as your additional source of income or become your next career. You don't have to start another business to create multiple streams of income. Consider spreading deeper instead of wider. If you provide services, think of the ways to offer complementing products. Write a manual. Film a course teaching someone the basics or specific skills. Any accomplished creative can write and sell an ebook revealing trade secrets and make quite a bit of income from this venture. There are many of us who are willing to pay to find out about successful strategies of our dream careers. For example, a $19 or $29 ebook that teaches efficient ways of starting a successful podcast is an effective way to discover if this is the direction we want to pursue. Writing a how-to ebook could create an additional income stream for the creative and can provide value for the reader, who could gain clarity about the potential path to pursue. Thanks to having multiple streams of income, you'll be running your business with confidence. It's comparable with the security of a steady paycheck. You will be less likely to run into financial difficulties if you have the security of receiving income from multiple sources. Pricing. Getting it right. When you examine the handbag industry, you'll notice that people often do not pay attention to product quality or attributes. If we feel that the product will make our life better or provide a true solution, we're ready to spend as much money as needed on it. People are less price-sensitive than we think. We often spend more than we can afford, but this overspending makes us feel really good. We feel like we invested instead of spent. Such investment provides two benefits. Immediate gratification, we feel great about buying, wearing, and owning something now, and long-term benefit, we feel the purchase will serve us in the future. We're talked into buying an expensive pair of shoes and explained that we're making an investment. We like that. Intelligent people invest. Customers like feeling intelligent. We also love bragging that we bought something at a discount more than we like bragging that we paid a high price for something. Having paid less than something is worth makes us feel savvy and smart to be able to find a bargain. Customers love feeling smart. The strongest feeling of all is feeling accomplished, feeling of having checked something off a list. If we truly show someone that her problem will be solved or that she'll feel better and her life will get better, we'll make the sale regardless of how much we're asking for. The problem-solving reasoning can be very convoluted. We can convince a customer to buy a dress because it'll accentuate her waist, which will make her look great on a date. She'll feel confident, she'll be funny, she'll get asked out on future dates, and find a loving partner. How much is finding a loving partner worth? Definitely worth the premium price of a dress, and she may even add some accessories, a belt and a perfect pair of shoes. Getting all three will make her feel much better than buying just a dress. She'll feel that she made a larger investment into what is important to her, increasing her chances of finding a life partner. Usually, our customers don't have a problem with pricing, but often it's the sellers who think they do. I met a couple who owned a jewelry business at one of the retail shows. They had a beautiful selection of sterling silver earrings. They were importing them from Thailand, and because they felt it was easy to do what they do, they decided to sell the earrings at wholesale prices, displaying them at $12 and $15. New entrepreneurs often don't count all of their expenses, justifying that what they did wasn't work. The same held true for this young couple, who doubled the cost of the earrings, not accounting for the time they spent in Thailand, and neither for the cost of traveling. They made a typical beginner's mistake of not counting expenses out of guilt that the trip to Thailand wasn't work. Setting such a low markup was putting their business at risk of running into cash flow problems, and their low prices were making their customers doubt whether the earrings were silver. Tim Ferriss adopts a free or ultra-premium approach. He has been generously sharing a lot of valuable info on his blog and podcast, saving his readers time and money. He also shares his efficiency hacks in his books. However, for speaking events he organizes, Tim charges premium. There's a reason we pay $5 for coffee and $2 for a bottle of water. We attend expensive conferences, go to nice places for dinner, and invest in appropriate attire. Sometimes we like splurging because, as we often justify, we work hard for it. If we come to your store, don't take the pleasure away from us by lowering the price we were ready to pay. Let us invest. Saying no to low-value work and discounts. As I previously mentioned, creatives often offer discounts without being asked for them. Customers are ready to pay a full price to support our business, and it makes them feel good. By offering them a discount, we deprive them of this satisfaction. In most cases, adding value works better than offering a discount. It makes the client feel special, and usually our cost of a freebie is inferior to the possible money foregone by selling at a lower cost. When a customer asks for a volume discount, suggest adding value instead. I use this technique all the time, and it works really well. For example, if someone buys 10 necklaces for all her friends and asks for a volume discount, I offer to give her the 11th one free. Hearing free does magic and is usually a stronger incentive than a discount. Here are three instances when you should highly consider offering a discount. 1. When a customer asks for it. Be careful here, as a lot of customers ask for a discount without expecting to get it. They always ask for it and will be okay with getting no as an answer. 2. When you feel that not giving a discount will make you lose the transaction. Sometimes you'll encounter buyers who may be price sensitive and will need to pay a lower price in order to afford the product. You'll have to evaluate if selling your product at the discounted price makes sense financially to you. 3. When the customer needs to get his way. Sometimes the customer needs to feel like he won, so even a minor discount will make him feel satisfied because he got his way. Depending on your cost and business structure, it's not always wise to offer a discount, even when you're asked for it. If the cost cut doesn't fit in your financial model, you'd better refuse it. If you see price aversion being a pattern, Let this inspire you to make some structural changes in your business. Know that as a business owner, you don't always have to say yes to customer demands. You can refuse selling your products at lower prices, and if you own a service business, you can say no to low-value work. Accepting projects, which may stretch you too thin and distract you from your core competency, may steer you away from the life you want to design. Be firm and stay on your dream track. I don't accept custom jewelry designs, and I don't repair jewelry made by other designers. This is not the direction I wanted to focus on, and I stayed firm with my decision by referring custom work to other designers who do that. You may think of it as a missed opportunity, but to me, focusing on my specialty and staying on track of what I want to do is most important. Going premium. What do Chanel, Gucci, Tesla, and Starbucks have in common? They are all considered premium brands. For premium status to happen, a brand needs to show it by setting high prices that have to be accepted by customers willing to pay them. We pay premium to drink better wine, get a better education, and wear more fashionable clothes. Usually there's nothing that signifies premium besides the creator announcing it by setting premium prices. Here are some characteristics of premium. Impeccable quality resulting from the creator's obsessive attention to detail. Premium brands have no excuses to provide anything less than perfect quality. They have a team of people checking and finalizing the ultimate look, paying attention to the tiniest details. Strong, consistent, recognizable branding. The logo, look, and overall brand image are all consistent and easy to identify. High price. The high price of premium is set independently of the cost. Branded jewelry pieces are priced as if they were made of precious metals, but most of them are made of rhodium or brass. Because of strong branding, customers perceive them as valuable, but what gives value is the image and brand. Excellent customer service and warranty. Often premium pieces come with said or unsaid lifetime warranty. When we buy premium, we know that the company will stand behind its products. Highly desired. We crave and desire premium. We aspire to drink premium wine and be ushered into premium seats at a theater or sporting event. We look enviously at those wearing branded clothes sitting in first class. Reliable. If we buy a premium brand product, both in one city and in another city halfway around the globe, we can expect it to be of the same quality. Premium products offer consistency, which many of us value. Many customers start their mornings at Starbucks because they know what they can expect. They don't want any surprises before starting their busy days, and they are willing to pay premium for it. Advertised. Creators of premium products and services make sure they expose their pieces in the right places. Clothes are loaned to celebrities, and paintings are sent to museums. Founders buy multiple-page ad spreads in magazines, showing abundance and style. It's as if there was a certain protocol to follow to stay at the premium level. Your turn. Reflect, discuss, journal. What products do you buy premium? Where do you try to save money? When was the last time you bought something considered a great buy? Why was it a good purchase? When should you consider offering a discount? Creative career insight. It's not about making your first million. It's about how much of that million you're left with. 11. Spreading the word and developing your brand.
You can cut back on a lot of things as a leader, but the last thing you can ever skimp on is marketing. Your product needs a champion.
Ryan Holiday, perennial seller. One of the most valuable steps you can take in your business is starting your email list. Your email subscribers are your asset, people who you can contact, sharing knowledge and letting them know about your products. When you publish a post on social media, your followers may miss it. When you send an email to your subscribers, there's a greater chance of them seeing it because they can open the email at their convenience. Some email marketers go as far as calling the email list your ATM. I'm just going to say that it's your biggest marketing asset. There are numerous email collecting services that offer campaign templates, email capture forms, etc. I use ConvertKit, but there's also MailChimp, Infusionsoft, etc. Wicked social media. We often find our social media usage innocent. We log on when we wake up, which seems harmless because our brain is not at its sharpest before the morning coffee anyway. We don't realize that feeding our mind with social media can make us crave it more throughout the day. Starting our day scrolling through the news may expose us to negativity, wake in us feelings of inadequacy, and worse, give our day a pessimistic tint. Another common, presumably justified time of social media usage is when we wait in line or during our breaks. It may seem that mindless browsing relaxes our brain, but it actually harms our overall concentration because our attention becomes fragmented. We keep hearing about negative effects of social media, but there are also firm believers in its benefits. How else can we amplify our brand messages if not with retweets, likes, and shares? How can we communicate with our audience? We may be able to benefit from social media without its negative impact by practicing mindfulness, by using social media consciously instead of reactively. In order to do that, we need to self-impose some rules. Here is what we should consider limiting. Checking statistics. It's easy to fall into a trap of compulsively checking how our posts are doing. It's important to measure them to achieve better results, but it's also not necessary to measure the post's hourly performance. Getting involved in controversial discussions. You'll waste your time and your mind will be preoccupied with dissecting comments and thinking of witty reposts. The time between reading and replying to comments will prolong the duration of the exchange. If the topic is close to you, you may get so consumed by the conversation that it may drain all your precious energy. It may be hard for you to leave things unsaid and leave the exchange. This may waste your precious time as well as leave your mind in a disrupted state for a long time. Reacting to criticism. This is very similar to getting involved in controversial discussions. But here, we're also being attacked personally, which causes more significant damage. Usually, criticism gets sparked by something unintentional. While this may be very upsetting to you, try practicing detachment instead of seeking justice and revenge. Being reactive. Consider being intentional instead of reactive. It's okay to leave things unanswered because not everything deserves your attention. Do try yoga, meditation, or any practice that will make our mind focus on the present and improve the quality of our thoughts. Being in nature, spending time offline in quiet, and surrounding yourself with positivity are mindful practices helping focus. Your personal brand. Focusing on projecting a consistent message throughout all channels will shape our image as an expert and strengthen our brand. Having a strong personal brand is being known as a go-to person in a specific niche. People will start reaching out to you for information, ideas, advice, connections, presentations, favors, opportunities, jobs, or partnerships. The stronger someone's personal brand, the quicker the person comes to mind when we think about a certain topic. We trust entrepreneurs who developed a well-established personal brand. They can expand and move more easily between categories because they have an army of happy, devoted clients who value their opinion and buy what they sell. It's up to creative entrepreneurs to decide if they should be the center of the business or if there are other stronger components that will make for a better story and company image. What's most important is adding personal touch to the customer's experience, providing value for them, and solving their problems. The brand should only focus on the founder if this shows to our clients that they are in good hands. Strong personal brand reassures them that they can expect quality and that their problems will be taken care of. Developing your personal brand is not about making you shine. If you're looking for stardom through entrepreneurship, you may want to consider a different path. You will get famous if you and your company can be famously helpful. Successful entrepreneurs become known by uplifting others. Determining the most effective marketing ways for you. Notice the word that describes your marketing reach. It's platform, not a box or anything limiting. A platform is wide open, offering endless possibilities to elevate you and your brand. There are so many ways to build your platform. It's for you to test and measure what efforts will advance you on the path.